My knee?
I can take the phone from here. So, okay, so we finally go down to the project site and...
Do you want me to push the button?
It's okay.
You got it?
Okay.
All right.
So this is the current condition of the park, and you can see there's the sign of the Miramar Park and the palm trees, and this one is you are looking down to the south, and then you see there's kind of like a row of the palm trees, but they are so far apart. Right now it's like 200 feet to 300 feet apart of each other, so you cannot really get a sense of the row of the palm trees. You know, go back to that photo that John was talking about those palm trees hugging the street. That really gave me a sense of this is a different community, right? So we're kind of like trying to introduce that kind of feelings into our park by adding more palm trees, so that emphasizes the identities of this community. And so down to the south end, that's the Shell Beach. And you know, there are a row of the crepe myrtles, which is very nice. This one is looking from the beach and looking towards to the north. And you know, you have this really nice the shorelines, and you know, there is a public green space right next to the water. And then right now, you can see that you can barely see. Actually, there are some palm trees just there. So, you know, imagine if we bring in more of the trees, and then you can have a very neat shoreline, and then there's vegetation to reinforce this place. Now we are kind of zooming out and seeing the entire Miramar Park. So, I took some photos from the Google and to see the each access point to the Miramar Park. And then, you know, about all the photos, you kind of like seeing the bench actually at the end of each the row. So I'm thinking there is already have the ideas of putting some amenities at the end of the row, you know, for the people that walk along the road. If they are kind of like tired and want to get rested, they can sit on a chair and then they can view the bay. And we're trying to kind of like formalize this idea. You know, part of the chair, the bench, actually along the road with no shade is not quite an enjoyable experience during some of the seasons, you know. And so we're trying to pushing that idea by extending the road to the waterfront. And then we're going to put in some overlook structures on each end of the street. So here is basically our plan, and I know it's a little bit small, but I was just trying to introduce some three major features of the design on this level. So you can see here, that's basically the first major feature that we put in the park is an 8 feet concrete trail. That is the trail actually go through all the park, and then we'll be sitting on top of the revetment structure. And the second feature of this park, we're going to introduce this whole row of the palm trees, and it's 40 feet apart with each other. And then the third feature of this design would be just the overlook structures at the end of four rows that lead you to this park. It's Shady Long, and this one is Oakdale, and on the north, this one is East Forest Avenue, and then the last one is Meadowlawn Avenue. Okay, so zoom more in so that you can see some more details about this plan. So we're going to start the trail with a loop. You know, rather than the usual case that you see the start of the trail with a large paved area, we're trying to just eliminate our paving area so that we are not encouraging cars to parking here. So we're going to create a loop of the trail, and the right side of the trail will be directly connected back to the road. And then in the middle, we're going to create a green island thing. And the Shell Beach sign will be put in on there, and then we're going to bring some more plants to that area to reinforce the sense of the entrance of both on the trail and then the beach itself. And then we're talking about to kind of extend the beach from 200 feet to 300 feet and then make it close to the fourth structure that we're about to create, which is extending from the Shady Long.
That's the other Shady Long.
What is that structure?
I'm gonna let you know.
We've got some close-ups for you.
Yeah. So this is a bigger view of this entrance. So you can see this, like a step thing. Is what we call is the super step. It's a higher than one regular step. This for the raising is 18 feet. Between 18 feet, 15 feet. 15 to 18 inches.
Yeah, so
for each the raise of
24 to 30 inches wide.
And then 2 feet wide of each of the steps. And we kinda like thinking that people can just sitting more close to the water by putting in this structure. And also if you have a boat, this could be a good place for a launch your boat.
Kayak.
So the trail continue on to the other side along the revetment structure as well, and then so does the row of the palm trees. And then at the end of this, maybe I should let you control.
What do you want me to do?
So at the end of this point, so because there are no residents around this point, we don't want people to stay or enter this side from this side of the park. So we just make the trail to loop around and come back. So people won't stay there long, so just walk by and then go somewhere else. Okay, here I'm going to show you some sections of the park. The first one, we take the sections of the revetment structures. You can see this is the engineered solution of the stone riprap. And right on top of it, if you remember the engineer section, they have a 5 feet flat zone, which we're going to extending the 5 feet to 8 feet and make it all concrete. So it's smooth and really comfortable for you to walk on top of it. And then we'll bring people actually closer to the water so that this gives people an enjoyable walking experience. So beyond, on left of that, we're going to put the palm trees about 15 to 20 feet away from the trail. And then since we're cutting a narrow place of the park, this from the street to the end of the long area is only 35 to 40 feet wide, and then the 20 feet wide road will be immediately attached to this long area. And beyond this part, that will be the private property, which I believe that the house is at least 50 to 60 feet away from the road. And usually the residents on the first road, they'll raise up their house a little bit high, and they usually have two stories. So we put like kind of like people standing here, that's how you can like feel you're looking the views that in front of your house. And down there, this is the wider situation of the park, which is 120 to 150 feet wide. And we're cutting through the overlook structures. So we're talking about, there's going to be a more blow-up slide next to it, so I'll talk details about this later. And the same thing, the trail will be directly attached to the overlook structure. Trees will be followed after the trails. And then you have this basically vacant long area that I imagine that there could be a lot of activities that are happening there, you know, like the kids can fly the kites or, you know, running around. There would be really nice. And then beyond that would be the private property. So this one is basically the blow-up of the overlook structures. You know, we're trying to make this whole piece of things sitting on the bed of the revetment, and there will be columns to support the surface. And we're putting the railings for the safety issues, And you know, rather than putting the front is just a direct 90 degrees down to the earth, we're trying to tilt it a little bit so that you can have 5 to 6 feet more towards to the water. People can actually standing right there and enjoy the views. And we're also putting chairs so people can sit in there as well. And we gave some trellis. This is kind of like a steel trellis on top of it. So you can, it's not a solid piece, but you can still have some shade area. And that's the trail next to it. So this is kind of like a 3D model that give you a sense of how that thing's going to be and the, you know, in terms of scale and the relationship between the trail, the tree, and everything else. And this is kind of like a rendering that's showing you what the view going to look like if you are standing on the road and, you know, looking towards to the north side, and there's your the overlook structures, and then you have got this row of the palm trees. This one is you looking down to the north side where the landings get wider, and that's how you got these structures, your wall, and then the whole row of the palm. So this is just a summary of our design with all these three basic elements, and then I think John gonna.
Yes, we have a couple more comments.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about how you can build on this idea of redevelopment of the park and the whole shoreline edge, and I mentioned that the sort of City of Shore Acres and the Phoenix Canarians, the Phoenix ornamental palms from Broadway to the Bay. This little diagram kind of shows in the dark green circles, we've got a lot of those palm trees from Broadway to the circle. There are many gaps in there, however, and there are some tallow trees and some other interventions in the public right-of-way. I think you can make a good case for convincing folks that we maybe ought to take the tallow trees down, but there's opportunities to introduce new palm trees to fill out the gaps between Broadway and the Bay. And the other idea is that in the median of the boulevard from Broadway to 146, we would put a row of palms in the median, not on the outboard side because we've got forest and woods and things, but to do it, and there are some crepe myrtles and there's some big pine trees in the median, but the crepe myrtles really aren't sort of doing that well, and the idea, the concept of taking that identity element of the City of Shore Acres and taking it to 146. And so there's the existing photo, and it's just a representation of palm trees. These palms, they grow very slowly. They are very expensive, but I would hope that we, you know, might be able to start with whatever we can afford. But a, you know, 3 to 4 foot, 5 foot trunk. It doesn't have to be a, you know, 15 foot trunk. But the idea of how we can come back, and this sort of shows existing palms and then sort of introducing, infilling with some new ones, and removing primarily the tallow trees. There's some oaks on the north side that have kind of blown over, maybe storm damaged and blown over. But I think it's a real opportunity, and this is sort of maybe a part of this project, or it could be a separate project. It's actually something we could start working on next Monday, you know, actually. But that's sort of back to the history and thinking about the whole community and how we can build on the shoreline improvements and to actually kind of carry that character all the way to the main entry. I think that's our last slide.
Yeah, so I think we are, if people want to go see the voice, I think
I'd like to ask you a question.
Well, we're open to any questions.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful idea to do the boulevard like that. I'm a little concerned. I don't live down there yet, but there's a God in heaven, I will, in about 12 months. But in any event, I can't really visualize the 40 feet separation along the bayfront, and that kind of disturbs me. 40 feet between trees?
Yeah, and actually, you know, the 40, 50, 60.
I'm sure there's a number. There doesn't seem to be the operative.
40 might be actually a little close. I went and measured on Shore Acres Boulevard, and there on at the main entry, there are like three and three on either side, right at the intersection. And those are about 25, 30 feet. But generally, they're about 60. They're 50 to 60. And I think actually 50 to 60 is...
I think it's a grand idea. Except, not on the bayfront. I mean, really the reason we're there is to look at the bay.
Sure.
I understand that what a palm tree might enhance, and I think Shore Acres Boulevard certainly would be an enhanceable place with hundreds of palm trees. I just have a little concern about a number of those in, I guess, what you're calling the park area. That's on the bay side of the Miramar?
Yeah,
okay.
That's the bay side.
I mean, it's inherently a beautiful place. I'm not sure that that many palm trees along there. If what you've drawn there is representative of what you're really thinking, I just can't imagine that anybody on that street would be in favor of that.
Yeah.
Not a single person.
You know,
it might be nice if you're driving down Miramar to be in a palm tree jungle, but I don't see it.
The jungle is certainly not, you know, and that spacing, it's a big bay, and they're big views, and palm trees, you know, are fairly narrow in that big
view. How slowly do they grow?
There.
I mean, there. I'm only going to live about 25 more years. After that, let me give you
an example. I gave the committee this morning, and if you go and look at the palm tree, the Phoenix canariensis is at 214 Silva, in LaPorte. And I don't know, I can't remember if we planted it in 66 or if it was there. I just can't remember. But I remember mowing the lawn there, and you couldn't walk under it. Okay.
More foliage.
The fronds are down, and you have to kind of just shove the mower. Go by and look at it now, and it's probably got clear trunk from the floor to...
At first?
Yes.
Okay.
Probably. And maybe a little bit more. And
I just tossed that out.
You know,
I saw a few other heads nodding on.
1966 to 2014.
Yeah.
So they are very slow, and for that reason, to buy big ones, I mean, they're $3,000 to $5,000 a piece. I mean, they're expensive.
Our Five Points area has $8,000 palm trees.
Yeah.
So if you know the size of those trees, that's how much they each cost.
So that's why
they're very expensive.
You get ones that are 3 feet, four, and they grow. And we plan them for our grandchildren and the future generations. I think it's the right tree, and on the bayfront, spacing, those existing, I think there's Texas sables, those palms, and they're like 300. You know, there are about three or four of them on the south end, and they're about 300 to 400 feet apart. So I would hope that we'd be able to get a row of palms on the bayfront, and whether they're 60 feet or 70 feet or 50 feet, but, you know, what are the lot widths on Miramar?
The standard lot width is 50 feet.
50 feet.
Most of the houses there are on double lot.
As far as looking for a rationale and a strategy, the strategy we talked about of where to put the overlooks, you know, kind of the street intersection. If you look at the lot layout, and the strategy is to put the palms on the lot lines, you know, maybe that's one way to think about it.
I really like the overlooks. I think that would enhance the park in and of itself. But my concern is that perhaps four overlooks might be too many for the size of our community in regards to the problem is parking, as well as trash. I've never heard anyone mention trash cans, which we desperately need to help in regards to the people that come in and don't pick up their trash.
Well, having appropriate trash receptacles for the climate as well as the place, I think is important, and I would certainly think that we would have you know, you'd have one at each overlook, depending on how many overlooks, and you'd have one or two at Shell Beach. And I mean, I know currently at the ballpark, I mean, it's a really simple, you know, very practical, very simple container with, you know,
right.
But so there are ways to do them, you know, appropriately. But yes, and then you have to maintain them, obviously.
Right.
It's
important. But how about parking in regards to handicapped parking? Do they perhaps utilize our pier area for
yeah.
the handicapped?
Well,
because there's no parking at Shell Beach.
Yeah, so we've I think parking may be the most contentious issue we've dealt with so far, been discussing. What the direction that we've received is, I don't think there's much desire to do any significant addition of parking for the park to bring more people here. However, we do have presently three spaces here, which is maybe not even, spaces may not be the right word, but they're there.
They're not really three, and they're actually within 15 feet of the fire hydrant.
Are they?
Yeah,
they
are. Which is kind of surprising. It was the road.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
and
the road.
So it's
the only off the street pay location.
Yeah. But the point, particular to ADA parking or handicap parking, mm-hmm. is we
the trail would be great for, you know, people
yeah.
that are wheelchair bound.
Well,
or
yeah.
We
need to do some investigation on the, you know, the ADA requirements. If we're not adding any additional spaces, I don't know if we're required to add ADA spaces. My gut feel from prior projects is I think we will be required to provide ADA parking, and we will probably, if we're not adding more spaces elsewhere, which I think the feedback we've gotten is that's not desirable. So we will probably have to take this and convert at least one of those to an ADA space, which will probably have to be van accessible, which is extra wide, which means that it probably will take from being nominally three spaces to being one ADA space and one additional
space. Is the general plan, well, first of all, I didn't know there were four of these lookout points. I thought you just had the one.
No, they're actually aligned with each of the streets.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, they're actually four.
Yeah.
Only one extends out into the bay, though.
The one here is the super steps. It's the terrace. But the rest of them are
the
one line.
And then it's going to preserve that sand, I assume. That's a buffer a little bit to keep the beach intact.
Well, yeah, that's actually something that we'll work on to make sure that helps anchor the beach.
And this
here.
Diagram, this concept plan, as Fang Yi mentioned, you know, where it shows the beach growing to the north about 100 feet.
Okay, yeah. So it would butt up to the
yeah.
sandy part of the
right,
beach,
right,
riprap
right.
or whatever
that's
you
right.
do is going to be
right.
on down.
Exactly.
But you're going to have one at each street.
Well, that's what we...
The,
you know,
well, not at each street. It's only at four of the streets.
Yeah, the other streets yeah. are... Well, let me go back to...
Yeah, so there's two there, and then there are two, one
okay.
at... One at Forest, and one at...
okay,
Catalan.
And the big one is at Grade. With steps down to the water?
Yeah, they're
right.
all...
Nothing's
the
raised above grade.
The
no.
platforms are all at grade.
Okay.
Everything
yeah.
goes down.
Right.
And this is the other... Three out of four of them are
yeah.
this concept. Now, we actually did discuss yesterday possibility of, you know, maybe two instead of four.
Maybe there are two instead of four. One
yeah.
to the north, one to the south.
Well, I guess what I was saying about... You know,
we're not Galveston.
Yeah. If the parking is, we've got the expanded parking place is at the pier. Are you proposing
well,
that would be concrete
okay.
or
the pier parking, as I understand, and Jerry, you can correct me if I step on my toes here, but the parking there is leased from the city to the Civic Association.
Oh,
the
Pier Association.
Recreation Association. Thank you.
Yes.
And that is not quote unquote open public parking.
No.
Yeah.
So public.
So what? I mean, what? How long is that lease? I mean, that's
Forever. What do we do, Chuck? 100 years?
We do 90 years.
Longer than you're going to live there.
If the city was willing to concrete or cement that, make it a nice parking lot instead of a
we have 240 members, and I've got parking for about 18 people. There's nothing there for free parking.
No.
It is reserved for members only, and we've been arguing with the city for years to get more parking, and they win because they own the land.
Right.
But we have to preserve what we've got.
Exactly, for uses it at the time.
I know you've had your hand up a couple times.
What limits, restricts, or otherwise inhibits to revetment and its intrusion into the bay? Because I don't think people quite comprehend the degree in which the existing land there would have to be excavated.
Yeah.
And such, if it just maintains the existing dimensions. So my question is if the revetment can be pushed further into the bay, that preserves more of the onshore from further reconstruction or whatever, and arguably would have the same effect, as I guess, as the revetment. Because it seems to me that, you know, the receding shoreline has been going on historically. There's no doubt about that. There's a series of photos on the city's archives that show that. And that should be one of the objectives, is trying to halt that march and halt the forces that are there. Because there's both acute and chronic. There's the chronic shoreline effects of traffic in the bay and tidal action. And then, of course, there's the acute caused by storms and whatever. And so it seems like if there's an opportunity to move the revetment further into the bay, then that preserves more of the land that's there now. Now, you know, I'm sure there's some impracticalities. I'm sure there's issues. For instance, like, I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest, and I'm going to say this flat out, that delivering revetment material by truck is going to settle very well amongst the people who live on Miramar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we already have issues there where people can't seem to get over temporary disturbances, and that's going to take quite a while. Mm-hmm. So the question really comes down to, can it be delivered from offshore and then placed, again, more into the bay?
Let me jump in.
Everything's a matter of cost.
Yeah.
The question is, are there any restrictions about what reclamation can be made from the bay?
Let me jump in and start addressing those, and if I miss one, come back and make sure that I hit it, because those are all really good points. Let me start with the what I call reclamation of land. There's two issues, or there's a few issues, but kind of two primary. The first is a regulatory issue. Once land became submerged, it becomes waters of the United States, and to fill in it, you have to get a Corps of Engineers permit, which is doable. That is not an insurmountable obstacle, but it is a hurdle that we have to get over. The other issue on the regulatory side is also, once that land becomes submerged, it becomes the state of Texas submerged land, and the state owns it, and they can actually charge you a lease fee for that land. That said, in my experience, that's through the general land office. Typically, for something like a park, et cetera, they'll develop a nominal lease fee, you know, $1 for 100 years or something like that. But typically, they don't want to release that land, and they have the mineral rights in perpetuity, et cetera, et cetera. So, Those are a couple issues. Then there's also a constructability issue, which comes down to, it's more difficult to fill, out into the water and get that sediment soil properly compacted to build on top of it, and not have some long-term, settlement and subsidence type issues. So That's the kind of more the design side. All that said, so where we're at, we've just gotten the topo surveys done, and we're now going to start the process of actually laying this thing out and developing the alignment, and we're going to have to figure out where do we cut and where do we fill. On the north side, for sure, there's no room to do cut. And in general, we don't want to cut any of the park if we can avoid it. You know, we want to maintain as much there as possible. But at the same time, we want to have something that's, you know, relatively easily constructible and is going to maintain itself well. So, you know, those are things that we're working on the trade-offs. The other issue regarding bringing the rock in, and I was telling J.O. earlier, there's basically two sources of rock that are brought down to the Texas coast primarily. Most of it, probably 90% plus, and almost all the larger projects, comes down from Missouri, comes down the Mississippi River, comes in the intercoastal, and comes all the way to Texas. So all the everything you see over there on the placement areas across the bay, all that's been riprap with rock from Missouri. When you can do that, that's typically cheaper. It is a monopoly. It is one company that owns the quarry that supplies all that rock. Prices have gone up a lot since Katrina due to all the work they've done over in New Orleans and elsewhere. But that said, they're still usually win the bids. They're usually the most competitive. But in the issue here is we got to get the rock from out there where it's 8-9 feet deep. Most of the intercoastal barges usually draft 9 to 10 feet. We got to get it from there into shore. So you can dredge a channel in to an offloading point and truck haul along the road, along the shore to build the revetment. And I've done that in past projects. And then you can, you know, refill that dredge cut, that trench back in when you go out. So that's an alternative. The second alternative is that there is at least one supplier of rock in Central Texas that loads on rail cars. They bring down to right at Bay Area Boulevard and Port Road. There's an area right there, and that's actually where they'll offload the rock, and then they can truck haul from there. And they can actually truck haul from there and load on barges and go elsewhere on the coast. But you know, for this project, they would probably just truck haul directly to shore anchor.